It's a ban on flags, party emblems and memorials at MLA offices. And one of the main people on that independent panel is Alan McQuillan. Alan, good morning.
Good morning.
Some people may say, Alan, that the independent review panel doesn't understand politics in Northern Ireland. You're trying to create an environment which would be welcoming to all people who have a vote. But surely the vast majority of our MLAs only represent those who clearly vote for them.
Well, legally, when they take up post, they affirm that they'll represent all their constituents. And there are several issues in this. I think the first one is, our interest in this doesn't come from any political stance. It comes from probity and the value of money for the money that the Assembly presents to them. And that money is purely for them to carry out their duties as Assembly members. Whereas many of these offices have in the past been presented as party advice centres. They're not party advice centres. They're the offices of MLAs that are funded for constituency duties by the Assembly. And of course, there are also staff that work in there, and the staff that work in there are also entitled to work in a neutral working environment. So what we have said to MLAs in this consultation document is that we propose to put rules in place that there shouldn't be displays of flags and emblems as part of the frontage of the building, etc. And if that isn't complied with, then they won't be able to claim rent for the building.
Can you really imagine staff in an MLA's office not batting with the same ball that the MLAs are batting with?
Well, as a separate issue, the question of the Fair Employment legislation comes in here as well. And as a separate issue, we're also bringing in new rules in the appointment of staff that will require fair appointment processes. We've got to remember, these offices are not for party political work. They're for the work of the Assembly members as constituency representatives. So they should be dealing with issues that their constituents bring them, which will be about all sorts of issues. But vast majority members tell us are about social problems, benefits, welfare issues like that.
Of course, and in the ideal world,
they're not supposed to be party political offices. They're supposed to be constituency offices for representatives representing the entire community.
Totally, and in the ideal world, that's exactly how it would be. We'd all feel comfortable going into any duly elected politician and ask them about a difficulty on our street, say with a water main, or indeed vandalism, and so on and so forth. But in this part of the world, you don't go in to the other guy's office. You go into the office of the guy that's our fella. We don't go into their office. That's the mindset of the Northern Irish voter. So therefore, if you go into, say, the DUP and you don't see any pictures of the Queen or union flags or mementos of Dr. Paisley, you're going to feel let down. You're going to feel you're in the wrong place.
Well, you may feel that, but the question is, you may feel that, but the other members of the community coming in to do that may not think those things. And it's not just one-sided to it. It affects all MLAs.
Of course, but do other members of the public want to go in to the DUP office? For example, do people who would never vote Sinn Féin want to go in and speak to Sinn Féin about issues that aren't green, white and gold? Would they expect to go in and see pictures of Sean McStafoyne up somewhere? You know, that's what Sinn Féin is about. So therefore, if you go in and it's a completely neutral space, it isn't Sinn Féin.
Well, I don't know about that, because I'll tell you, I know from my own past experience that I know some MLAs in the past have been very strongly identified with one community or the other, have actually been seen by people from across the community as brilliant constituency representatives who represented everybody fairly and honestly. And, you know, in some cases, I knew people who in the past, for example, when Dr. Paisley was alive, would have gone to him in preference to the other MLAs or other members, because they knew he could get things done for them. And that was part of the pattern of life with those members. But the point is this, we're representing the community in this, we're representing the Assembly, and MLAs also have to comply with the law. So what we're doing is making what we believe are sensible changes to bring this into line. Now, if MLAs objected, if the community objected, this is a consultation process. we've put this out there. We hope people will come back to us and give us their views.
Yes, you're going to be allowing them to September to come back with their opinions. Is it open to everyone, or is it just open to the politicians, the consultation?
It's open to everyone. They can write to the Independent Panel at Stormont. They can email us. It's all on the website. They can send it in by letter in whatever way they wish. And we will be delighted to get views from as many people as possible. And, of course, it's not just about flags and emblems. We're completely restructuring the way that MLAs can claim their expenses. And this is just one aspect of that.
Yes, and I'll get on to that in just a second. But you say the only logo should be the flax flower, the logo of the assembly. Again, that's utopia. I'm just wondering about a situation somewhere in the future where all our politicians are under one flower, the flower of the flax that we can all embrace. It is a bit of a dream, isn't it?
Well, why shouldn't we aim for utopia in the short term? The bottom line is this: you're going to see an MLA. You will know who that MLA is. You know what he represents politically, but you're generally going to him for help, or her for help. And what you'll see is an office that simply says in the front of it, the assembly symbol, Joe Bloggs MLA, constituency office. You go in there and you'll seek help with your problem. What's the problem with that? What's the difficulty with that? You don't need an office that has flags and emblems and memorials stuck all around it to enable you to do that. And we believe that this is the best way forward.
But do our politicians not need all that regalia? Do they not need those mementos? Is that not what motivates them? Is that not where they're coming from? Is that not who they are?
That may motivate them politically, but again, I come back to the point. These officers are not for party politics. They're for their job as representing all sections of the community, all members of the public as their constituency representatives. That's quite different from party politics. And that's one of the reasons that we've taken this step. And equally, again, the staff working in there have the right to enjoy a neutral working environment that they can come into and feel comfortable in.
They rarely argue with you when you suggest that they're entitled to more money. Do you think they'll argue with you on this one?
I hope we get an honest expression of views in this one. And it may be across the board, because this is a fairly fundamental change. You know, many of these offices are portrayed in particular ways as belonging to particular parties. And I'm sure that this will prove very controversial, but we debated it thoroughly within the panel, and we decided that really it was something that we should do at this stage.
Regarding an office that an MLA has, talk us through how that is paid for, the office in the street that the MLA is sitting in this morning.
Well, the office the MLA is sitting in, the MLA is entitled to draw down payment for a number of expenses from just under an amount of just under £70,000 per annum. And at the moment, there's just one big pot of money basically sitting there, and they're entitled to draw down money for rent, all the expenses, rates, etc. They're entitled to draw down money for all the office equipment, IT, etc. they get. And some of the consultations we published earlier this year showed that, for example, there's been a huge degree of disparity in the rents that MLAs pay, the size of office they occupy, how many staff they pay, and how much they pay them. And we're proposing to reform all of that. Now, the paper we've just published, our previous research showed that MLAs can pay somewhere between $4,000 a year in rent and $23,000 a year in rent for offices for doing effectively the same job. The average is £8,000 a year they pay in rent. So we have decided to cap the maximum rent that they can pay at £8,000 per annum.
Is that to avoid some of that money going into party political coffers because they rent from their own party?
Well, that's a separate issue, because we're coming to that as well. What we're saying is maximum rent payable, £8,000. If you rent from a connected party, and there's a definition of what a connected party constitutes, for example, your political party or people connected to you politically, the maximum you can claim drops to £4,000. If you share offices with other politicians, again, the maximum rent you can claim drops. So we're putting very stringent controls around rent, and particularly about renting from connected parties, family members, political parties, people like that.
Are you encouraging them to actually share the same facility, people from the same party? Very, you know, occasionally you see one MLA has an office, another MLA from the same party has another office not that far away. Would it not be more cost effective to have them all in the one office?
Well, what we've done is we've tried to provide a bit of that. What we've said is, if you have two MLAs sharing an office, they can each claim £6,000. So, instead of £18,000, they're getting £12,000. But we believe that by doing that and sharing facilities, they could actually provide a much more cost-effective service, and they'll still have the rent, etc., covered. So we've tried to do a bit of that, but what we've said is that if we have MLAs, for example, who are sharing offices with councillors, etc., then it's absolutely right. The assembly money is voted for assembly business. It's not right that money might be used for the offices of MPs or MEPs or councillors, and therefore there has to be a sharing basis in that. And therefore, if the MLA is sharing offices with people like that, then they have to get a lower allowance.
Are you going to clock them in and clock them out at Stormont? Is that another idea?
That's another proposal. The vast majority of members, let's be clear about this, the vast majority of members actually manage their money very well, and the vast majority of members attend Stormont dutifully every day. But if they do not, and there have very occasionally, been people in the past, maybe for various reasons, who haven't, then in those circumstances, we've proposed that if they don't attend 99 days a year, then for every day below 99, they lose 1% of their salary and 1% of their travel allowance.
And just one final thing on the travel allowance. It's very rare for people to get paid for making the journey to work. That sounds like a throwback to the good old days. They still get a certain allowance to travel from their home to their work, don't they?
Yes, MLAs get the mileage allowance for several reasons. First of all, they're entitled to home to office mileage. In other words, every day they travel from their home to their constituency office, they're entitled to claim mileage. Then they're entitled to claim mileage from their home to Stormont, and they're also entitled to claim mileage for any work or travel that they do within their constituency.
What are they getting a mile at the moment?
45p.
You could live on
but
that.
It drops for the first 10,000 miles, then it drops to, I think it's 25p a mile.
Yeah, I remember actually working for this very company when they had that policy when I just started, and there were guys coming from OMA who were making a small fortune, and obviously the company changed its rules and regulations eventually, and the guys who worked in OMA sought other work because it was a distance for them to travel, but they were also losing out. They were losing out on what was a very valuable source of cushion as opposed to income, that allowance that they were getting. And to think that MLAs in 2015 are still on that gravy train, that's how their constituents will think of it.
Well, I don't think they would think of it as a gravy train, but yes, I understand that. When we looked at it, we've just decided that in our view there is no justification for this. Again, can I just say, in favour of the vast majority of MLAs, some of them don't claim this at all. In most cases, the amount they claim is very small, but there are a small number of MLAs who live a very considerable distance from their own constituencies, where the claims have been up to about £11,000 or £12,000 per annum. But we're talking about a handful of members. But they would suffer heavily as a result of this. But we simply do not believe that this can be justified in the current arrangements that we have and the current economic situation that we have. So we're proposing to cut that. But we're also proposing to change the whole basis on which the mileage allowance is calculated. At the minute, MLAs authorise their own travel, and there is virtually no cap on the amount that they can claim. So what we're proposing to do, and we've done a very detailed scientific analysis on this, we've come up with a figure for each constituency. So if you're an MLA in Foyle, you'll get a flat rate amount every month paid to you to cover all your travel and accommodation expenses, etc. And that could be £500 or £600 if you're in Foyle or West Tyrone. Around Belfast, it may be £50 because of the shorter distances involved. So we've tried to be as fair as we can. Our duty is to give MLAs the resources they need, and that's what we've tried to do.
Can you impose this idea of the neutral working space without it being voted through by the very MLAs you're trying to get the message across to?
Yes. Once the way the law is framed, once we issue a determination, the determination becomes law in effect, and it then applies. And what our determination says is we can't say you must take down those signs, but what we can say is if you don't comply with these rules within a set period of time, you don't get paid any rent for the premises.
Interesting to see how it all progresses. Alan, thanks for giving us a very detailed analysis of it. Thank you.
No problem.
That's Alan McQuillan there.